Learning Pod, a Gannett-powered podcast on everything education, featuring Sheridan Hendricks, Alyssa Widman-Neese, and Megan Henry from the Columbus Dispatch. Today on the Learning Pod, we'll be talking about an important question facing Ohio lawmakers. How much should the state pay to educate its kids? I'm Sheridan Hendricks, higher education reporter here at the Columbus Dispatch. With me are Alyssa Widman-Neese and Megan Henry, who cover K-12 education at the Dispatch, and special guest Anna Staver, a State House politics reporter for Gannett's Ohio Network. It's that time of year again where Ohio lawmakers are tasked with creating the state's biennial education budget. In February, Governor Mike DeWine announced his proposed two-year budget, which kept funding for K-12 school education relatively flat. He said at the time that he wanted to leave the decision about how to fund Ohio's public schools up to state lawmakers. As it turns out, the House and the Senate have two very different ideas about how to tackle it. K-12 school funding has been a point of contention in Ohio for decades, and many have called the state school funding formula broken. Anna, how did we get here, and what about this system is considered broken?
Well, it's mostly because about 80% of public schools don't use the current formula. They're all on like the exception to the rule. So they're either getting more than the formula says they should through something called a guarantee, or less because they're capped. And so lawmakers and educators are like, what good is a formula if 80% of people don't use it?
So Ohio has 1.7 million students in its public school system. What does it currently cost to educate all of them, and how do we get to that number?
So it costs right now about $10 billion. But the big question is kind of how do we get to that number? The way lawmakers describe it is like baking a cake without a recipe. Like the previous General Assembly has kind of like had a number they could spend on education and divided it rather than thinking about what education actually costs. So they just kind of threw stuff at a wall and said, this is what it costs. And so both the House and the Senate are like, we want to actually have a formula that is based on real costs. They just have very different ideas of what that is.
So, like you just said, House and the Senate, two very different ideas of how the state should overhaul school funding. So let's start with the House. What is the plan proposed by the Ohio House of Representatives?
Okay, so they've been working on this for like 5 or 6 years. They've gone through several lawmakers because of term limits. But the basic idea is that right now we have one statewide base cost. And so think of that as like the base layer of a cake. That's average kid, average school. And so you have this base layer, and then you have all these categoricals, which are add-ons, so other layers for like English as a second language, if you're special needs, if you're low income, because we've discovered that children who are economically disadvantaged cost more to educate. So you build up all these layers, and that's how you have like the individual cake for the cost of the individual kid. And then, so what they say is that is way too standardized for Ohio public schools, because a school in Cleveland has very different costs than a school in rural Appalachia. And so this formula that they do is tailored to the individual district. So it's what does it cost in this district? And then how much do we think this district can afford to pay on its own? And that's like your state share. So basically they build the cake and then the state decides how much they're going to give you. So like they cut a slice out and they're like, you should be able to do that on your own. And here's your cake. And I really like the cake analogy, so I apologize to everyone. This is how I think about
it. Very helpful. So.
And so that's what they do. The House says, we'll build a cake to your needs, and then we'll give you the slice based on your ability to pay. And it ranges from like $7,000 to like $8,000 per district. That's kind of the range with, I think the median is somewhere around like $7,300 as a base cost, that base layer. And then all the categoricals would get added on. And so that's kind of how the House thinks about it. And they also changed how they calculated that state share, that like slice you should be able to raise. It used to just be on property taxes. And that's kind of the heart of that DeRolf like Supreme Court case decision. So they now are 60% property taxes, 40% income. So it's more of a reflection of like the wealth of a district or its ability to raise money on its own. And so they changed those two parts sort of fundamentally.
And can you talk a little bit about the Supreme Court decision and kind of how we got here and why this is so confusing in the first place?
Yeah, so back in the 90s, a group of superintendents and school districts got together and it said, like, our kids are not getting an equitable education and the Constitution of Ohio requires you to give us one. And the Supreme Court was like, you're right. A lot of it had to do with school buildings, like the quality of the buildings that these kids were in, also the quality of the education they were receiving. And that's kind of been the biggest question ever since. I think the ruling was finalized in 97, And Alyssa can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was 1997.
I think so.
And like ever since then, we've been trying to decide what quality means. And that's kind of subjective, right? Like I have another analogy that I joke. It's like building a house. So like you have your builder basic house, right? And we have an idea that it should have like a solid roof and working toilets and like, but then the question that every couple has when they build a house is, do we need the upgraded wood cabinets? What about the granite countertops? Should we have carpet upstairs? Like what is a quality house can kind of get subjective. So like what is a quality school gets subjective.
Yeah. And it was March of 1997.
Oh, I was right.
So, well done.
Nailed it.
You've done your homework.
So we know the house is planned. It's taken years for them to get to this point. What about the Senate? What are they proposing?
So they are going to stick with the standard statewide cake model. So they're coming up with one base cost for everybody. And it's substantially less overall. It would be about $6,100, whereas the kind of average of the other plan is $7,200. And it is 80% of the average teacher's salary sort of forms the backbone of it. And then they have all these calculations to how they get to $6,100. But the thing to keep in mind about it is the House plan took like $1 billion in wellness dollars, which are sort of wraparound dollars for like counselors and things that happen outside the classroom that could impact education. And they wove that into their base cost formula. The Senate doesn't do that. It keeps the wellness dollar separate. So even though you have a much lower base cost, there is like a fundamental difference in how they're calculating money. So I always think that's important to kind of point out. But so they keep one statewide base cost. And they don't change the state share of instruction. They sort of tweak that, but they don't do this overhaul of like 60% property tax and 40% income. So it's more of a modification of current formula than it is like a brand new formula.
So the deadline is on June 30th.
Yes.
The clock is ticking. These seem like two very different plans. So how do we compromise? What's going to happen when we get to the end of the month?
I don't know. There are some places where they agree. So right now, school vouchers, the money is given to the school and then the school pays the private school. Both plans would directly fund school vouchers. So like that's one thing that we just know is going to change. And that's something school districts have really been asking for, is to just create a line item and directly fund those from the state. Like, don't send us the money and make us send it to these private schools. So like we know that's going to change. We know that we probably are going to see an increase in the base cost in some form because both plans propose an increase. Both plans include like studies, which are really interesting, is like we don't really know what it costs to educate an economically disadvantaged kid in Ohio. And so like both plans include a study to kind of get a real number for some of these like categoricals, these like add-on layers. And so I think those are things that like, So I think they'll start with all the things where they can agree. But yeah, the formula is like a real big sticking point. And I mean, I don't know how they reach a deal on it. They have to constitutionally. They just have to by June 30th because we have to have a budget. We have to start paying for the rest of state government. But it's hard because it's two very different approaches. And the Senate says that the House plan costs way too much. And the House says that the Senate plan doesn't do near enough. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know if there's a logical place to meet in the middle. You can't just do like half of one formula and half of the other. I don't know.
Well, it's going to be an interesting rest of the month to
yes.
see what they end up deciding. We'll check back in with you whenever this gets figured out. One thing before we close, I did want to consider, because I think it's easy with stories like this to get really wrapped up in the numbers and forget what's really at stake here, which is educating Ohio students. So for Anna and for Alyssa, what will be the impact of these plans on local school districts and their teachers and their students?
Well, I think when you really boil it down, you can think of it just like you would your own budget for a year. You have to decide what to do with the dollars that you have. And the districts are really doing the same. These are their operating dollars. So they use them to pay for day-to-day expenses like teacher salaries or programming. So if they get more or less of that, they can do more or less of that. So I think, especially if you have a child who is in school right now, you can think about it pretty tangibly affecting things like class sizes or what sort of activities they might be able to participate in. I think when it comes to the fact that so many districts are on a cap or a guarantee, that has a really big impact here in Central Ohio. Pretty much every district is on a cap. There's a couple who aren't here in Franklin County, but most of them are. And in Columbus City Schools, for example, the treasurer told me that the $90 million that his district should be receiving every year, but isn't because of the cap, is enough to operate grades K through 3 each year. It's about 7% of their operating budget. So when you put it in perspective like that, there's a lot at stake. And when that money isn't provided at the state level, even if you don't have a kid in school, you are affected because it's property taxes that are used to make up the difference. So that could impact how much you're paying each year for your house's taxes. So there's certainly a lot to consider. I think I totally agree. It is very easy to get caught up in all of the numbers, but I think Anna's done a great job of giving us some tangible sort of metaphors and analogies for how you can think about it.
That's just kind of how my brain works. I was actually really excited when Senator Bill Blessing used my cake analogy yesterday on the floor, and I was like, that's my idea. But he said a local reporter gave him the idea, and I was like, But no, I totally agree. So full disclosure, I have a kid in the Olentangy School District, which is up in like the Powell, Delaware area. And we are primarily property driven. So, and they're very heavily capped. And that is something I think about is that like last year, my property taxes went up by $600 a year because of a massive school levy. And I'm not saying it wasn't necessary. I'm just saying it hurt. But it does go to like people can afford their mortgage, but they can't afford the ever increasing property taxes. And so they move out of district. And that is a thing that happens. And what Olentangy has always said is that if they got off the cap, they wouldn't need a levy for like a decade. Like they would be solid and set. Now they're super capped. And one of the things that we hear, and this sounds interesting, so DeRolf was a case where there were poorer districts that went and sued for an equitable education. The next school funding lawsuit could come from a wealthy district like Olentangy, who says, you have denied me the money I'm owed. And so, you know, I think it's like, that's just, that goes to like the fairness of like whatever we create. And I know it sounds kind of weird to be like the rich districts is like, we're not getting enough money, but you shouldn't shortchange anybody anywhere. Like, and I know it's a little weird to be like the wealthy district says they're not getting enough money. But at the same time, like putting it all on property taxes does make it unaffordable for a lot of folks. And I know people that have moved out for that reason. And a lot of times it is older, like retired couples that have been in those homes for 30, 40 years. And that does suck to sort of have to say, like, this is our family home, but I can't afford the taxes anymore.
Yeah, Olentangy is really a textbook example of why people say this current funding formula is broken. And really the reason that they're capped so much is because they grew at the wrong time. And Licking Heights was another district that I spoke with about a month or so ago when we were discussing the House proposals that would actually eliminate those caps and guarantees. And they said they feel like their class sizes would be smaller for students if they weren't capped. But they also grew during a time when these caps were put into place, really just because the money wasn't available to pay what the districts were owed. There wasn't any other reason given for why this is happening. It was just these districts are owed this much money. We don't have it. And we're just going to stick with the formula we have. And the districts have to figure out how to make do. So it's really frustrating for the school leaders because it is a topic that is so complicated that it's very difficult to boil down for the people who are paying the taxes and the people who they keep having to go to and ask for more.
Anna, thanks for being on. To learn more about Ohio's education budget, you can follow Anna and Alyssa's coverage on dispatch.com. And if you'd like to support more local journalism like this, please consider subscribing to the Columbus Dispatch. Visit dispatch.com/subscribe now to learn more. Thanks for listening.